Chapter 11. Spire Albion. Fleet Shipyards.
Creedy!
Grim called as he made his way over the mist-shrouded gangplank from the airship dock in the Fleet Shipyard atop Spire Albion and onto Predator.
With me! Captain on deck! Called Kettle down in the hold. Mr. Creedy, to the deck!
My cabin,
Grim said with a grimace, and headed that way.
Aye, sir,
Kettle said. Then, in an astonished voice, he said,
Captain, your clothes. Sir, you're wounded.
Grim sighed and looked down at the borrowed outfit Ferris had lent him. It was not, strictly speaking, an actual suit, having been made from two or perhaps three vaguely similar suits, none of them particularly fine. He'd rigged his wounded arm into a sling.
Aye. Summit came out of the vents and tried to make a meal of me in a side tunnel. My own fault for taking a shortcut.
Bloody hell,
Kettle said, clearly angry.
Doesn't Habel Morning employ verminositors anymore?
No permanent harm done,
Grim said, giving Kettle a quick wink.
How many men are on shore leave, do you know?
We've a quarter crew aboard,
Kettle said.
The boys are off seeing some duel happening in the market today. Couple of highborn sprats going bare-knuckled, 'twould seem. There's a group bet against a bunch of those rascals from Glorious.
I hope they make out,
Grim said.
They'll need to, after what Itasca did to our accounts.
Never fear, sir,
Kettle said.
The boys will be fine.
He finished folding the long web of ether silk he'd been untangling, secured it with leather ties, and then stowed it in one of the lockers beside the base of the rigging, despite the fact that the masts and spars were currently missing from the ship's upper deck, not yet having been replaced.
Let me get a door for you, sir.
Thank you,
Grim said. Kettle opened the door to his cabin, and Grim stepped in, turning to pass his sheathed sword to Kettle.
See this cleaned for me, would you? Bit hard to manage with one hand.
Aye, sir,
Kettle said, accepting the weapon and shutting the door behind him. Grim settled down in his chair. His wounded arm ached quite uncomfortably, though Ferris assured him it was healing. Folly had presented him with a small jar of rather sharp-scented unguent, and he was supposed to apply it to the wound every time he changed the dressing. Something else he would have to ask for help with. Mr. Bacon, the ship's doctor, would doubtless find it tedious and complain interminably about the haplessness of wayward captains. Creedy knocked and entered when Grim bade him do so. The tall young officer had to duck his head a bit to keep from bumping it on the ceiling.
Sit,
Grim said. You look like you're apologizing for something just standing there. Creedy smiled faintly and settled on the bench along the cabin's wall opposite the bunk. Kettle says you were injured, sir.
Some damned creature came out of the vents, I suppose,
Grim replied.
Worse attacks have happened.
Bad luck, Creedy said. We've had a bit of a run of it, haven't we?
I suppose that depends on how one regards it, Grim replied. We had a rather good bit of luck in surviving an engagement with the Cortez class and Itasca, after all. We're here to tell the tale.
That's true, sir, Creedy said. He bit his lip. You were gone overnight. I hope you don't mind that I granted the men liberty.
They'd have hung you from a spar and taken it if you hadn't,
Grim said. Keeping a quarter crew aboard was the right decision. Creedy looked slightly relieved and nodded. Good. He glanced up at Grim and said, Captain, I don't want to overstep my place, but...
Go ahead. Ask. Pour us a drink while you're at it.
Creedy looked believed to be given some orders to follow while he spoke his mind, and he drew glasses and bottle from their usual places. Sir, I've been taking a survey of the damage.
How accurate was Journeyman's estimate?
Spot on, sir, he replied, somewhat reluctantly. The blighter is insubordinate, but he knows his job.
Yes, he does,
Grim said, accepting the glass Creedy offered him. Sir, Creedy said, The estimate for repairs is considerable.
I'm aware, Grimm said.
I'm afraid that, times being what they are, there might be those in the high houses who might begin to put pressure on you to sell.
Really?
Grimm said.
Well, I suppose they have the right to make offers.
I'm afraid they might be more aggressive than that, sir,
Creedy said earnestly.
Well, if they get out of line, I'll just slap them around and threaten them until they stop,
Grimm said. At that, Creedy all but spat out some of the drink he'd just taken. He managed to choke it down, and after a moment managed to chuckle. My sister told me you had an odd sense of humour, sir.
I suppose I do,
Grimm said. But, joking aside, what are you going to do with her, sir? I mean, I don't know if you'll be able to get a loan, not in these times. If you won't sell her, and you can't repair her, what?
Grimm studied the young man for a moment. Creedy seemed almost painfully earnest, and Grimm had always thought well of the young man's family. But Rook had obtained a description of Predator's wounds sooner and more thoroughly than he should have. Someone had talked, and while Grimm had no reason to suspect that it was an act of malice in general, or Creedy's act in particular, it was perhaps best to employ a modicum of caution.
Let me worry about that, XO,
he said. There are several possibilities to explore, and I'm going to examine them all. Meanwhile, we stick to Journeyman's proposal for refitting her. I saw to having the death benefits paid before my little adventure in the ventilation tunnels. We'll replace her spars and her web out of what's left of our current funds, as well as the bulkheads and the number 3 gun emplacement. There's enough money to do that much, and it will be your concern. I'll secure the new crystals we'll need.
Sir? I thought we might take on a cargo.
Cargo? Grimm asked.
In her shape?
No need to strain her, sir, Creedy said quickly. But a short run could yield some quick, modest profit.
A short run?
Grimm frowned. You mean down to landing, don't you?
There's always cargo coming and going from the lower Habbles, sir, Creedy said.
In barges, in scows,
Grimm said quietly,
and on windlasses.
Predator is an airship, Commander.
With all due respect, sir,
Creedy said, looking down.
She isn't.
Not right now.
Not until you've secured the funds to mend her.
I'll consider it,
Grimm said, and managed to avoid growling as he did. Thank you for bringing it to my attention.
Sir, Creedy said, it might take you several years of work to earn it that way. But it would be honest work, at least. There's no shame in it.
And no joy, either, Grimm said. Not for me, not for the crew, and not for Predator. You can't expect a cat to change his fur for you because you think it would be better.
Creedy blinked at that.
I don't understand.
A ship is more than wood and crystals and ether silk, Byron,
Grimm said.
Some thick-skulled VAT counters have always said it was nonsense, but the men on the ships know better. Airships aren't just vehicles, and the men who treat them like more than that get more out of them.
In the Academy, we were taught that it has never been conclusively.
I went to the Academy too, thank you,
Grimm said. The Academy is where knowledge begins,
not where it ends.
You're a solid man. You'll understand in time.
If you say so, sir,
Creedy said dubiously.
I do,
Grimm said. But for now, why do we not consider ways we might... He stopped abruptly. There was a faint, faint sound, something he had heard before, hauntingly familiar. Then he placed it, a high-pitched humming, like an ether wasp, gliding effortlessly on an etheric wind, but louder, wider, deeper. It was the distant war cry of an Auroran destroyer, if he remembered correctly, the Siervo.
But that would mean...
Grim bolted to his feet and flung open his cabin door. He stomped onto deck, bellowing, "General Quarters! General Quarters!"
Creedy came out after him, gave him the briefest of stunned looks, then whirled and started ringing the ship's bell.
Grim hurried to the speaking tube and shouted, "Journeyman, get your drunken ass out of that chair you think I don't know about and run up the main crystal. Get us off this dock and bring up the shroud."
Journeyman didn't reply, but only seconds later the planks of the deck began to quiver and vibrate as Predator's main power crystal stirred to life, and less than a minute later she let out groans and squeaks of protest from her battered timbers and began to rise.
"Kettle, the lines!" Grim bellowed, but he didn't need to do it.
Kettle was already taking an axe to the heavy lines that secured Predator to the dock, cutting the wounded ship free.
Meanwhile, Siervo's war cry grew louder and louder and louder.
Around the shipyard, vessels of the fleet began to call General Quarters as well, the alarm bells ringing in strident cadence. Somewhere in Habel Morning, immediately below the shipyard, an air raid siren began to wail.
And then the enemy was on them. Siervo, Grim was sure of it now,
appeared out of the mists above in a screaming dive that took her streaking down past the shipyard at a steep attack angle. Her guns spat thunder and howling light into the docked airships and into the shipyard itself, detonations flinging men and equipment about like tea leaves whirling in a stirred cup. And behind her, following her same dive, were half a dozen more vessels like her. Fire began falling from the far side of the shipyard, marching toward Predator in a swath of hellish destruction. Even as Grim watched, Chivalrous, a heavy cruiser 3 times his own ship's size, vanished into a cloud of fire and light and screams of anguished ship and crew. Other ships were struck, though the heavier vessels, even without their shrouds up and active, were only minimally harmed by the light guns of the enemy destroyers. The oncoming fire destroyed a merchant ship named Tinker, only 100 yards from Predator. Then another merchant vessel called Surplus blew into flaming splinters only 50 yards away, in the neighboring slip. Splinters and bits of metal, and worse, flew past Grim in a deadly cloud, some of the pieces so close that he heard them go by. Grim planted his feet as he felt his ship wallowing up off of a dock, lifted his chin and wondered whether he'd realized the danger in time to stop the Auroran squadron from finishing what Itasca had begun. The fire of the final ship in the column fell upon Predator and shattered into light and whistling shrieks against the ship's now active shroud, the light blinding without his protective goggles. Grim held himself perfectly still, as if his entire field of vision had not at all been converted into a tapestry of dancing colours, and then the screams of the diving vessels faded abruptly as they plunged past the edge of the spire and on down into the mists below. Grim blinked his eyes until he could see again, and scanned the misty sky around the shipyard. He saw what he'd been afraid he would see, and turned to Creedy calmly.
"Form a shore party to bring the crew back to duty," he said. "Tell Kettle that he's acting armourer. Crew to be armed with gauntlets, sidearms, and tunics immediately."
Creedy only stared at Grim, stunned. His eyes flicked around the shipyard, where dozens of fires had begun to blaze, consuming the costly wooden structures that had been erected to expand upon the original spirestone design. People were screaming and dying.
"Creedy!"
Grim snapped.
"Sir!"
He repeated his orders.
"Aye, sir,"
Creedy said, blinking, and set about them. Given a task, Grim thought, Creedy was excellent at seeing it through. Within a moment he had dispatched Kettle with an armed shore party, and put Journeyman in charge of distributing weapons to the crew and preparing more for quick issue when Kettle returned.
"I don't understand, Captain," he said when he was finished. "Why arm the men?"
Grim pointed at a bit of debris floating lightly on the wind. A stray current of air or ether sent it gliding down to the deck of Predator.
It was a small rectangle of ether silk. He picked it up and held it out to Creedy. The square of silk stirred and rippled in the shipyard's etheric eddies, moved just as it might by wind, though in a slower, more graceful manner.
"Is that..." Creedy began.
"The etheric sail from a boarding rig," Grimm confirmed. "The flag-size squares of ether silk were used to help propel and guide the flight of a parasail. With decent etheric currents, a well-managed parasail, and a bit of luck, a man could climb, descend, and alter course. In the fleet, such rigs were used in boarding actions, with marines leaping from their airship and using them to glide down to the enemy vessel." Grimm held up a few broken cords fastened to the ether silk and said,
"It would appear that they frayed and snapped when the rig opened. Whichever poor bastard was using it as part of his gear is on his way to the surface now."
"The Aurorans always were cheap about the equipment for their marines."
Creedy finally understood and stared up into the pale mists overhead. The sun was a dull circle. Some days the top of Spire Albion could see open blue sky. Today, the typical blanketing mist had reduced visibility to a few hundred yards at best.
"You think there are enemy marines on the way?"
"This isn't a full fleet assault," Grimm said. "The Spire's batteries were surprised by that dive, but you can be sure they're ready now. If the Aurorans intended to seriously assault Albion, their battleships would have blanketed the shipyard batteries with fire the instant their own ships had completed their pass."
"Then this was a raiding force?" Creedy asked.
Grimm frowned, looking at the yards. The fleet vessels had not reacted as swiftly as Predator and her crew, but they were now in the process of leaving the shipyard, gathering together 200 feet above the spire, concentrating their armor and firepower. Albion's home fleet consisted of a core of 20 rock-class battleships, absolute leviathans 100 times the mass of Predator, and correspondingly sluggish and slow to respond. They were accompanied by a screen of lighter vessels, around 50 cruisers and destroyers of various tonnages. All of them had sounded general quarters and were underway. Grimm watched the fleet lurching into motion, which he suspected to be futility in action, and jerked his chin up toward the mists above them.
"You've got to admire how well the Aurorans managed that pass of the spire, and in mist like this. But those destroyers can't lock horns with the home fleet, or with the spire's batteries. They damaged or destroyed a few lighter ships, but they couldn't possibly have hoped to inflict serious harm to home fleet."
"You think the attack was a distraction?" Creedy said.
"Why do it otherwise?"
Grimm nodded overhead again.
"I suspect there's a troop transport up there, dropping its complement."
"Merciful builders,"
Creedy said, his eyes widening in understanding. "They knew the fleet would mobilize. They wouldn't have any choice."
"Precisely," Grimm said. "If they can get a body of troops into the spire, God in heaven only knows what mischief the Aurorans could manage. And as we speak, every marine in home fleet is aboard his ship, up there, where he can't defend the spire."
"We've got to tell fleet," Creedy said.
"I'm an exile, and you've been habbled, Byron," Grimm said quietly. "All I have is a theory and an old piece of ether silk. Even if we could get word to him, do you think Admiral Watson would stand down?"
Creedy's face looked pained, frustrated. He nodded slowly, his eyes thoughtful. Then he said,
"The men are a fine crew, but they aren't professional soldiers, and a regiment of Auroran Marines will outnumber us 3-1. They'll tear us... That is, we'll never defeat them."
"We needn't defeat them," Grimm said, "but only slow them down. Bayard has a crooked mind, but it works perfectly well. He'll realize what's happening before long."
"Yes, sir," Creedy said quietly. "What are we to do?"
"Gather the crew, arm them, and defend the spire, Mr. Creedy," Grimm said. "Make ready to repel boarders."